Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Attention, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness to share tips about all things that can support you on your journey to becoming the best version of yourself and build a bulletproof mindset to get whatever you want out of life. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm so excited to have my guest Ross Edgley with me on the show today. Ross is a decorated expert in the fitness industry. For over 10 years, he's been involved in every area of sport, fitness, and nutrition imaginable. Wait until we start talking about some of the things Ross has done. I'm so going off script. I'm so super excited for this interview because of the way Ross is as a person and what he's done. It's going to be awesome. Anyways, back to talking about Ross. He started as an international athlete playing water polo for Great Britain, but later moved into the academics of sport and graduated from the world-renowned Loughborough University School of Sport and Exercise Science. Ross is a co-founder of sports nutrition company, The Protein Works, and writes for a range of publications, including Men's Health and Men's Fitness. On top of some crazy fitness challenges that we'll talk about later in the podcast and the one that he's currently doing, Ross famously did the world's strongest marathon where he ran 26.2 miles pulling a 1,400 kilo Mini Cooper. Was it a Mini Cooper? To raise money for charity.
Yeah.
And his long-awaited book, The World's Fittest Book, which I've already pre-ordered. It's already on the bestseller list. If you haven't pre-ordered it, head over there now and do it. It's going to be a killer read. It's out next year. Ross, welcome to the show.
Brian, you legend. That is the greatest introduction anyone's ever given me. Hey, thank you so much. Jokes aside, and I said this to you the other day, I think I've set a world record for the most podcasts of yours back to back. So I honestly, as you know, I'm swimming a lot at the moment. I'm doing like 14 hours in the pool. So I get so bored. So somebody bought me underwater headphones. And then when I'm not there, I'm on the bike. So as soon as we met, obviously, about a month ago now, you know, I started checking out. So I have listened to every one of your podcasts. It's amazing. I think that's my new world record.
Look, man, you're smashing them all over the place. Talk us through, before we get into your background and everything like that, talk us through what you're trained for currently, and you're about to, by the time this airs, you'll have done and completed. But talk us through what you're doing next week.
That's right. So we fly out tomorrow. Long story short, I'm planning to swim from St. Lucia to Martinique, so that's across the Caribbean, 40 kilometers, towing a 100-pound tree.
T-R-E-E, just for anyone else, because when I... Just to give a bit of context, he's not just swimming it, he's going pulling a tree with him. Sorry, Ross, go on.
Right, we probably need to explain. So what it is, it's called Strongman Swimming, and it kind of evolved from last year when I did the world's first triathlon, which was an Olympic distance triathlon, carrying a 100-pound tree. And it was weird because... The swim was enjoyable in a weird way because, you know, swimming was kind of my background. So I came out of the water on the triathlon actually in a decent position. I was like, I've got this, you know, podium finish. And my mate was like, no, you haven't. and I did. I came like, you know, I was awful. Everybody overtook me on the bike and the run. But everyone afterwards was like, do you know what, Ross? Like the swim, you were quick. You were quick with the tree. So they said, look, why next year don't you explore that and see how far you can take it? So we did 10 kilometers in Windermere, which was cool. And again, that was all right. And then 20 kilometers in Loch Lomond, which was a little bit cold, but it was all right. And then now it's going to culminate next week. Like I said, with this crossing 40 kilometers across the Caribbean. I originally wanted to do it across the channel. I know me and you were talking before, but the people, when I rung up the channel, the Coast Guards and the people, and I wish I'd recorded this phone call, Brian. It was on the phone, and I was just like, oh, yeah, I want to swim the channel, but I want to be, like, towing a tree. And they, and I quote, replied, but you're not a registered vessel. And I was like, well, how do I become a registered vessel? And I went, well, how do I become a registered vessel? And they hung up on me. So, but then the Caribbean Tourism Authority heard about it, and they were like, well, just come and do it in the Caribbean. I was like, all right, that seems warmer anyway. So it's a bit further than the channel, but it's a bit warmer as well. So that's basically it, right?
That is absolutely incredible. I can't wait to see how that goes, and that I wish that was recorded, because that is viral stamped all over it. I don't even know where to start, because you've got so many areas that you've conquered in terms of the things you've done in fitness. What kind of got you into it first? I know swimming is your background. Talk us through what got you into fitness in the first place.
Yeah, I think all of my family. So my granddad was a great marathon runner, and my dad's a tennis coach. My mum's a sprinter. Older brother's a football player, younger brother does capoeira. So we're just like, at Sunday dinner, you know, around the Edgley household, if you don't play sport, you know, or you don't talk about sport, you'll just be like, what is everyone talking about? So that was kind of the background. But I think, like, I mean, and honestly, Brian, I'm more excited about this podcast than you, because I want to quiz you on what you're about to. Have you announced it, by the way? Because I've been telling
everybody. I announced it that when I did my first 2 kilometers at the end of my workout at the end of August, and I was like, fucked after 2 kilometers. I was just saying to you before we started recording that I'm up to 30k now. I'll be up to 40, 45k by the time this goes out. I'm increasing it 5k every week. And the first few weeks where I was going 2k, 3k, 4k at the end of workouts is harder than now. Like, that initial start, because as you said, like, I'm just going to give a little bit of context to how you look for anyone that's listening and hasn't seen your photo on my social media yet. Ross is hinch. Like, the dude is jacked. Like, he looks like he's just stepped off a bodybuilding stage. Like, and he's just got this endurance for swimming, for running. It's ridiculous. Just to give a little bit of context for as we go on for the rest of this. But you, even just to give context to people that know what I look like, bodybuilder shape, the first 2, 3, 4 kilometers nearly kill me. But it's funny, when you push past that, now 20, 30, even going into 40 kilometers, not a problem. It's conditioning, the heat, you know, the Marathon de Sable. That, for those of you that are new listening, the Marathon de Sable, 256 kilometers self-sufficient race to the Sahara Desert in Morocco, doing next year. It's nothing to what Ross does, but it's different.
For those listening, Brian's massively underplaying it. When he caught on, so it is considered, it's widely been dubbed the world's hardest endurance race. So that's so when Brian first told me about it, I think that's why me and you bonded, probably, because it was just, I was like, you're doing what? You're amazing. And then we just started. I mean, we were meant to be, we were at this rugby event, we were meant to be coaching and working, and me and Brian just went off and we started. But what me and Brian started to do, and to answer your question, we both started to deconstruct each sport and sort of just systematically see how you can do it. Now, you made a very good point earlier, which is like running. It's a primitive movement pattern that, you know, we're all kind of born innately to do it. And what's so nice is how you strip back training. So Hans Selye, 1936, he came out with the law of adaptation, which was just, he basically... took loads of lab rats, gave them a lethal dose of poison, and those rats, they died. And then, but what he found was by giving these rats a little bit of poison, a little bit, they built up an intolerance to it, and then all of a sudden, they were given that same lethal dose of poison, but they'd built up a resistance to it. So from that, way back in 1936, we now understand training is just the same. It's stress and stimuli. So I think too often people are looking for magic pills or these like elaborate training routines. And what I love what you're doing, Brian, and I love it, and I tell everybody about it, is, you know, you are just chilling out there in Ireland. Do you know what I mean? And you're just, and you are going to experience stress and stimuli, heat, endurance, lactic threshold, VO2, your lungs are going to be burning, all of these things. And the only way to do that is just to systematically do 2 kilometers, turn that 2 into 4, turn that 4 into 8, and then just do it. And that's what I think too many people get caught up in, you know, the detail. It's like, make fitness as complicated as it needs to be, not as complicated as it has is often made to be.
Yeah.
And this is what's amazing about you, that when you do it, it's just, you will line up and know that you've got that mileage in your legs. And I think that's why me and you got on so well and still do, because every time we catch up, you're just, and it goes for everybody as well, I think, in fitness. Pick a goal and then just work backwards and deconstruct how you get there. But ultimately, it will always boil down to this idea of progressive overload, just doing more than you did last week and getting, just making peace with the fact you need stress and stimuli to adapt. You know, we've known that since 1936, like I said, Hanselia.
It's relative, whether it's, you know, losing body fat, losing a couple of dress sizes, building up to the Marathon de Sable, swimming across the Caribbean. Like, it's relative in terms of how, like, everyone's goal. Sounds so fucking crazy when you say it, but everyone's goal is so relative. But it's finding what that means for you. And then, you know, for anyone that's listening, it's working backwards from it. And set the bar high. Like, I do love the old adage that, you know, aim for the moon, you'll at least hit the stairs. Like, set your bar high and then work towards it, because it's amazing what you can achieve in terms of your body composition, your fitness, when you work backwards from it. Just to get into that, as we speak on it, how did you deconstruct the marathon, the world's strongest marathon? I remember, just to give a little context to people listening, I was over working with one of my mentors in LA when I heard about this crazy fucker that was going doing a marathon dragging a Mini Cooper. Now, this was before I'd known who you were, before we were mates, anything like that. And I remember reading about it going, what is this guy doing? And the first thing I thought was, no way, that can't be done, not getting done. And then I started reading articles that he had fucking done it. And I was like, oh my God, how did that look? How did your, I know we spoke about it a little bit when we met first, but just for everyone listening, deconstruct how you broke that down, because you're not only need to be fit enough to run a marathon, which is a massive goal in itself for a lot of people, you have to be able to fucking strongman train to drag a Mini Cooper behind you as you did it. How did your 6 months, 8 months, however long your training period, how did that look beforehand?
Yeah, so that in many ways, so for anyone listening, I always use what's called almost like a pyramid of priority. And it's this like hierarchical way of actually seeing where you should focus your efforts. So with anything like the World's Strongest Marathon, you look at the base of that pyramid and it's just like, what do I have to do first before everything else? Like, we can talk about what energels you need and nutrition intra, pre and post. And it's like, hang on. None of that matters if you can't overcome the inertia of the car. If you can't move the car a meter, none of that matters. So in terms of that pyramid of priority, that first one was just understand the laws of physics. And that's, I'm trying to move this big like object, 1.4 tons. So I need to basically, I have two choices, generate more force. And I can either generate more force by pushing harder with my legs, or I can increase my own mass. That's just the law of physics. So I looked at Newton's laws of physics. And I obviously, the easier one of those was, yeah, continue strength training, but also, you know, just increasing my mass. So that was over Christmas. I had an unbelievable Christmas life in everything. And I met with Jeff Capes. And this is interesting as well, because I know me and you are very sort of similar body types and size. And I remember I was like, and I was quite big at the time. I mean, I'm built like a hobbit, so I'm like 5'9". But, you know, I hold a lot of muscle mass. Yeah. So I know I'm not like a strong man, but I remember at the time thinking, you know, I'm pretty strong. I was like benching 180. I was squatting like, you know, 250. I was like, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And I told Jeff Capes, two-time World's Strongest Man, I told him about the World's Strongest Marathon. And I never forget, like, I love Jeff because he's so honest. And he just looked me up and down and he just went, you are far too small. And I was like, what? I'm a beast. What do you mean? And then, you're tiny, mate. I mean, and for those who've seen Jeff, he is like, he's two of me. He shakes my hand and my hand disappears. So I was like, okay, fair enough. So I was like, so what do you suggest? And he was like, you just need to get bigger, dude. And I was like, all right, fair enough. So I did. And that's that pyramid of priority. You know, first of all, look at the laws of physics. You know, I needed to add more mass to overcome the inertia and the mass of the car. You know, that car started to move. And I was on a very similar journey to you at that point. You know, I remember pulling it my first 1K. And I was like, my back is in pieces. Like, my Achilles, my tendons. And then what's, and this is true of every sport, then just start looking at like what, within a kinetic chain, so the body's sort of movement pattern of any given sport, what is the weakest part of that? What's going to give up? Where are you fatiguing? And, you know, my lower back was like, oh, I'm in pieces, you know, and my calves started to hurt. So you then start to address that. And if you need to do supplementary conditioning to help that, then great. But ultimately, and this is, it comes back to what we've just been saying about running and swimming. It's embracing stress and stimuli, but then fusing that with the SED principle. So for those who know, that's the specific adaptation to impose demands. And it just means, sounds complicated, it's not, it's just a fancy way of saying, if you want to get good at a particular sport, practice that particular sport or movement. You wouldn't try and improve your golf swing by deadlifting. You know, you wouldn't try and, you know, get better at swimming, you know, by playing football. Just be specific at what you want to do. So basically, I had to make sort of peace with the fact it's incredibly boring, but I just had to pull my car around the Cheshire countryside. And exactly what you said, you know, Brian, which is just turning 1K into 2, 2 into 4. But the, on that note, and one thing that's very interesting is a lot of people said to me, oh, how are you feeling after each session? I bet you're in pieces. I bet you hurt. But what's interesting is pulling a car is very similar to a sled drag or a sled push. So, and I'm going to try not to go on too much about the sports science, but basically you have different forms of muscle contraction. So when your muscle is in tension, but it's shortening, that is concentric. So that's like the upward phase of a bicep curl. And when it's an eccentric phase, it means it's in tension, but it's lengthening. And that's like the eccentric phase, the lowering phase of a bicep curl. Now, solely looking at the concentric phase of any movement pattern, if you only emphasize the concentric phase, you can actually, one, increase work capacity, but then two, you prevent and reduce the amount of muscle damage that you're actually producing to the body and the stress on the central nervous system. So that can mean only performing the upward phase of a deadlift and then drop the weight. Everyone tells you don't drop the weight, but no, drop it. And then if anyone says, why are you dropping your weight? You could say, I don't want to do the eccentric phase because I want to be fresh for the next day and I don't want to stress my central nervous system. So there is a legitimate use to it. But with a sled drag and pulling a car, you're only ever, if you can imagine your legs moving, you're only ever concentrically contracting. So the weird thing was, is my rate of recovery was much smaller than a lot of people believe. And this is what I always say. People go, whoa, you ran 26.2 miles pulling a 1.4 ton car. I was like, but yeah, in terms of physiology and biomechanics, when you understand that concentric contractions don't produce as much stress to your central nervous system as muscle and your muscles, it's not actually that bad. And people go, no. And I'm like, no, honestly. And
you're so humble, man. Because I would literally be like, I would tell everyone I met for the next fucking 70 years. I'm like, yeah, fucking 1.4 ton marathon. Yeah, me, right here.
But, and that's what I love that you can, when you tell people, I mean, I was running again the very next day. And I just did 10K just because I was really interested to see how my body felt. And it's really nice that when you can remove the stigma and the restrictions in some people's heads, that they go, oh, okay, I never thought about it like that. And genuinely, it's exactly the same with you and what you're doing. If you can go and run the Marathon de Sable training in Ireland, if Ireland is your training camp, I'm like, well, then that's unbelievable. Like, then what, you know, that's amazing. But yeah, so sorry, that's a long-winded answer. Sorry,
that, mate, that's an awesome answer. That's I love that. And it shows that a lot of the fear or limitation we have can sometimes be broken down by understanding the sports science or understanding the actual, because normally the things we fear in all areas of life come from a lack of understanding, you know, a fear of the gym, fear of anxiety, fear of relationship, fear of whatever channel that is, can sometimes just come from a lack of understanding. And even as you say it there, if I was to, for example, it makes you think in your own head, okay, if I break it down and understand what's going on concentrically, that's what I'm loading, I'm going to recover better, and I can train, build up more mass, the laws of physics. When you break all that down, it just makes it so, it's not achievable, because fucking, it's not an easy thing, but it makes it less daunting, which I think is an amazing thing, because that translates into all areas of life.
You're right. And that was what I mean. As you know, I started this year running 30 marathons in 30 days. Right here, actually, there was a treadmill set up in the kitchen.
Yeah, I was following that.
And it was all just to trial different sorts of foods. But what was so nice is people were like, "Oh, I've always wanted to run a marathon, but I don't think I could." And I'm like, "No, you absolutely could. As humans, we used to cover miles and miles. You had to, because otherwise you wouldn't eat. You wouldn't be able to. You know, primitively, dating back to cavemen." Yeah. We were meant to cover a marathon. You absolutely, maybe not quick, you know, yeah, maybe you're not probably not going to go sub 3 hours, but you can absolutely do a marathon. And it comes to back to what you said there, Brian, that when you deconstruct it and you say to people, okay, so what's your lactic threshold? What's your pace? And someone will be like, oh, it's this. And I'm like, okay, that's really slow, but that's absolutely fine. Yeah. That's what we're working with. Let's look at feeding strategies. Okay, we're going to be refeeding every 15 minutes. We're going to be taking on, you know, and you can really break it down. And that's one of the nicest things that a lot of people have said, that having seen some of the weird stuff that I do, it kind of removes the stigma. You know, a lot of people said, I always wanted to do a triathlon, but I always thought it was quite hard. But then I saw a guy do it with a tree, so I thought I'd give it a go. And it wasn't that hard. And I'm like, see, so I just think so many people can just like remove the fear and remove the stigma. The, you know, triathlons and marathons are not these abstract events that are, you know, achieved by only a few. No, you know, everybody is absolutely capable of. You had to be capable of it, because otherwise we wouldn't be here now. You know, when you look at the actual theory around, you know, the hunter-gatherer, but the fact that we evolved as these endurance athletes who, you know, basically were endurance hunting, there's a theory, it can't necessarily be proven, but there's a really good theory that we were running our prey, our food, into the ground when we were cavemen. And when I lived with the Sam Bushmen out in Africa, I was lucky enough to actually do that and witness that. Because you look at us humans, we don't have huge teeth, we don't have claws, we're not the strongest, but, you know, we were one of the smartest. Well, let's claim it, we're the smartest.
Yeah, we're the top of the food chain, prefrontal cortex development. We'll take smartest in terms of species on the planet right now.
And that's it. So it's nice to say, look, you absolutely can. You know, yeah, you know, it might not be quick, but you could definitely run a marathon. And that's what would be amazing. If people have listened to this in any sort of way and they go, oh, I decided to run a marathon after this, or half a marathon, do something that you didn't think you could do. But I love what you said, Brian. Set the goal high, higher than you think you can achieve.
Yeah, that's it. And it's relative, because just because it may take you 6 months or 12 months or 18 months or 6 weeks for some people, it's relative. It's moving the bar and then have the end goal in mind and just reverse it back. That goes for everything. That goes for business. That goes for fitness. It goes for have the end goal. You can't hit a target you can't see. So have the end goal in mind and just work backwards.
100%. And I love what you said there about life as well. We did this, that concept of pyramid of priority. I did a lecture not too long ago. It was hilarious. It went so left field. But I got everybody to write down on a bit of paper, because I said, look, I've created strongman swimming. And to learn how to strongman swim, again, pyramid of priority, first you have to learn to swim. After you've learned to swim, then you need to learn to swim a bit further. So that's where you look at nutrition. And then once you've learned about nutrition, that's when you can start evolving and you look at the like hydrodynamics of the tree, you look at waves, tides, currents, you look at mental fortitude, and it starts to go up the pyramid. But ultimately, you need to learn to swim first and then nutrition. But I said, but that's just me. I said, everybody in here will have their own triathlon or their own strongman swim that's specific to you. And now this is where it got a bit weird, Brian, mate. I said, everybody get a bit of paper. Everyone got post-it notes. And I said, write down on a piece of paper. And I want you all to just keep it secret. And so nobody knows who's written it. I want you all just to throw them at me. You know, at the front of the lecture, just throw them at me. And I'm going to pick one off the floor. And together, we're going to, and I had a board, and I was like, we're going to go through and create on a board so we can collectively solve this person's dilemma by creating a pyramid of priority. I only went and picked up a bit of paper, and it was, I don't know who it was, like I said, to this day, but it was just like, he basically wanted to get with a girl, and it was like, how do I get with a girl? And I was like, no, I said, let's roll with it, it's valid. It's absolutely valid. So number one, and we all agreed, whether we like it or not, there needs to be some physical attraction. That might sound shallow, but that's your base of your pyramid, because that's what's going to get, you know, that girl or guy to look, yeah, you know, as you move up. And we basically deconstructed this pyramid of priorities. So it sounds so weird.
Man, that's freaking awesome. I wish I was at that lecture. But they're taking fucking notes. I'd be like, oh shit, that's what I've been doing wrong.
But this was it, and everyone got so into it. And I think that's what's really nice, is just to get people creating their own things. Like, and that's why I was buzzing when we met, because I was like, what you're doing is incredible, and I can't wait to follow your journey. But I think everybody has one. And I don't know, maybe that guy did get with the girl in the end. I need to email him.
Man, that's a testimony and a half if he does.
What?
Don't mind your fucking 60 pounds in 6 weeks. It's like, yeah, hooked up. Man, I love that. So, I'm just kind of curious even myself on this, because we didn't get into this too much in terms of nutrition, and I know you're big on experimenting with different things. Even when you were doing the 30 marathon, 30 days, I know you were changing things around, see what your body responded to. What does your nutrition look like generally? Do you follow any system? Do you consistently change it? Or do you have a base that you always kind of go back to? What does it look like generally?
Yeah, I can. I'm going to keep this so short so people can take little sort of gems away, because I can talk phrases and I don't want to. But it's basically, nobody wants me to do that. But
I totally do. I'm going to link all Ross and stuff. If you're not fucking, if you're not following him, literally as soon as this podcast is over, go to Instagram, go to his website, go to Facebook, and follow his stuff. It's awesome. Right. Sorry, Ross. Go on.
Legend, you're a legend. This is the best podcast. I just drink green tea and just chat with Brian. One, I eat intuitively, because I feel that that's a lost art form. Only reason being, I think too often now we're looking to eat through rules and checklists, you know, whereas like historically you look at the anthropology of us humans, and like if me and you were cavemen and we were like running across the desert, I'll be like, oh, Brian, mate, what's that? And you'll be like, I don't know, mate. And I'll be like, well, eat it and find out. And you would eat it and I'll be like, what's it like? And you'll be like, I think it's good. And that's what we used to, it was this edible exploration.
Yeah.
And you might be like, oh, mate, I'm wired. I reckon I can keep running. I'm like, oh, that must be full of sugar.
Yeah.
Or we wouldn't call it sugar back then. We'd have been like, that's energy.
Yeah.
And what's really nice is it goes back, this is so left field again, I'm so sorry, but like, I lived in the Amazon with the Jamanawa tribe, and I was basically learning to become a shaman, as you do, taking ayahuasca.
in between fucking World's Strongest Marathons and fucking running 30 marathons in 30 days, just going to become a shaman.
So we were taking ayahuasca, which is a really powerful hallucinogenic, and one thing that was amazing is one, to create ayahuasca, it was incredible that they must have known that the roots of certain plants, when mixed with this, makes you basically just trip balls and just like speak to your ancestors. That's what they believed. And I'm like, wow, you must have just gone around just eating everything in the jungle to come to this kind of conclusion. But what was weird is I the first night I did it, and I'm sitting down, and they didn't speak English and I didn't speak Jamanawa either. And I took the hallucinogenic. And then they handed me what was kind of like, it was like a conch, it was like seafood, basically, like an oyster. And they handed it to me, and they were like, eat that. And I ate it, and I was like, oh, thank you. And one of the tribes guys turned to me, and he gestured, I don't know if people can see on the podcast, but he gestured, forgive me, he basically gestured like an erection. He was just like, you know, he was like, oh, you'll be a man. And I was like, what? You know, and it was chanting, he was like, oh.
He's
like,
just for anyone that's not watching visually, he's fist bumping. There's nothing else going on in the video. Before you go, head over to YouTube to check it out. He's doing a fist bump.
Someone tuned in at that point. Oh, I see what Frank said, but I'm going,
sorry, everyone.
Yeah, so he gestured, and I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, basically, he was translating that it's an aphrodisiac. So I was like, oh, for God's sake, you've going to give me a powerful hallucinogenic, and now you've made me chow down on an aphrodisiac. But what was amazing is they didn't know that it was very high in zinc, and they didn't understand the effect on luteinizing hormone and testosterone. And they didn't understand that. They just knew that if you had that, and you ate this particular, you know, form of seafood, that they quite often have a very you know, pleasant night with their girlfriends and wives. Yeah. You know, and that's what they understood. And I was like, that's amazing that you didn't read any studies, you just intuitively knew it. And I think that's quite often the best thing that you can do. And too often people like just submit control of their diet and fitness. It's like, no, like take ownership, eat a food. How does it make you feel? Does your body respond well to it? Are you lactose intolerant? Are you not lactose intolerant? How does your, are you fat adapted? Are you carb adapted? Do you know what? Only you will know that. And that's what's going to be great about what you're doing again out in the desert. Because I think when you're fatigued, if somebody right now, if I handed you some, you know, some jelly babies or something, there you go, Brian, you'll be like, yeah, they're not bad. But I guarantee when you're midway through Marathon de Sable, if I gave you jibbies, or your body might just be like, I just want a bacon sandwich because of like the salt. And but you don't know until you're there. And that's what's going to be amazing. It's just, you might just be in the middle, maybe remembering this conversation, just going, man, I wish I had like some donuts right now. Your body is more intelligent than we often give it credit for. And you could read all these studies going, oh, you know, if I was coaching you, I'd be like, oh, Brian, what you need is this many electrolytes and this. No, no. You can be like, Ross, I don't care what it says on your bit of paper. Get me a bacon sandwich, you know, and that's what will get you through it. And I know loads of people who have done, you know, the Bob Graham, which is a famous, we were talking about this before, but a famous, for those who don't know, famous fell race. And it's basically 44 peaks in 24 hours, 66 miles, brutal. And I know many people who have done it on, you know, fish and chips. It's like, why? And they're just like fish and chips? Who argue? If that's what your body runs well on, then, you know. So one, eat intuitively, but eat honestly as well. So some people go, what? That means I can just have fish and chips all day. And like, I'm like, well, no, be honest with yourself. And that's one thing that I find, to couple that intuition, but with endurance training and also like strength training, you'll see a lot of people when they're trying to bulk up and they'll just go on this like crazy, you know, 5,000 calorie surplus diet thinking that they're bulking up. And I'm like, if you're honest with yourself, you know you don't need those additional 5,000 calories. And exactly the same with nutrition and endurance. You see a lot of Ironman athletes and they're just overeating digestively. They're there sat on the bike going, oh my God, what's going on? It's like, well, you were trying to compensate for a lack of fitness with more nutrition. You know, you're only going to hold so many carbohydrates as muscle glycogen. So why did you have those additional like 1,000 before? So yeah, eat intuitively and eat honestly, I think is one thing that I always preach. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's amazing advice. It's funny you say that because I actually did that at my first ever 10K when I did Survival of the Fittest in London. It was just one of those obstacle course races out in the middle of London, probably about 6 years ago now. And I was that. I did no training first. And I'm like, 10K, easy. I was like, I've played sport, 10K. And I ate like 1,000 grams of carbs the day before, thinking, yeah, well, that'll do. Like, I felt sick for the first 5K. I'm like, that was a terrible idea.
But there's nothing wrong with it. It's like trial and error. Yeah. And that's the thing. There's nothing wrong with it. Some of the best endurance athletes I know still get it wrong now. Yeah. You know, out in Kona, so the Ironman, you know, that's just gone. And the humidity out there, it's a different beast. And some people would have performed amazing all season and they just get it wrong. But also to strip it back, it's the same with some people when it's, if your goal is just fat loss. So I'm just like, be so honest with yourself. And I love what you said about sometimes just understanding what's going on inside the body. So like a lot of people, the biggest thing that I quite often get on my social media is people say towards the end of the day, they'll start reaching for the cookie jar or the ice cream. And I'm like, well, you know, when does this usually happen? Like, oh, towards the end of the week, I get a bit tired. I'm like, you're tired. Okay, so that's you're tired. Brilliant. So what? And you're reaching for sugary foods. You've got an appetite. And they're like, yes. I'm like, brilliant. Okay, we're getting somewhere. That is a biological signal that your body's trying to tell you you're deficient in something. Now, too often, I think the media says like battle cravings, you know, combat cravings. I'm like, why are you battling them? That's your body trying to tell you something. Listen to it. Don't battle it. And if you are tired, it might be ghrelin, leptin, two hormones that basically exist in a tug of war in your stomach. You know, they will just be completely out of whack when you're tired. So it's inevitable that you're reaching for the cookie jar. Not because you lack discipline, just because your body's going, you know, we are tired. Go and get a cookie. That will make us feel better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so just understanding that, like I said, intuitively, but also honestly, with a certain amount of education, when 7 or 8 o'clock hits and you might put Netflix on and you're chilling out and you're like, oh, I could do with some ice cream right now. Just say, do you need some ice cream?
Yeah.
And then we were talking about it in detail as well. Freud, you know, says that, I can't remember the exact, it's like 80% of human actions are completely unconscious, that we will just go and before we know it, we've opened the fridge and we're there and we're chowing down on some ice cream and, oh God, what's happened? You know, I didn't know I was doing it. Yeah, you didn't know you were doing it because we're creatures of habit and you need to be so honest and sort of, you know, in the moment to go, do I actually need ice cream? You know, is that what I want or am I tired? I think I'm tired. I should go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, and when you start, I always still do that now. Yeah. I still do that now. But now I've got that state of mind where I go, be honest with yourself, Ross. And then it makes no difference. It doesn't matter what journey you're on. If you are Brian halfway through the marathon de Sable thinking, do I need, you know,
some jelly babies or a bacon sandwich?
What do I need? Because the decision that I make now will have a profound impact on the rest of the race. Or are you someone who's just chilling and had a crazy week at work and on Friday their body is still sending them the same biological signals that it's sending to Brian midway through the marathon de Sable? It's just so happens that I'm sitting on the sofa. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same biological signal that you need to start to understand to listen to your body.
And that, I love it, because the truth is, it's not about beating yourself up for feeling that way, because as you said, it's a direct feedback on what's going on in your body and use that. Whereas, as you said, sometimes the media and different things can be like, battle the cravings, you know, this is what you need to do. And again, I've been a victim of this in the past where I'd be like, right, do this because this is why you've got cravings. Sometimes it's just listen to your body and figure out, okay, well, what's going on? There's a feedback here, a feedback loop. Is it environmental? Is it something to do with your nutrition? Is it because you didn't sleep well enough the night before? What is it that's going on? And then just put plans in place because, as you know, Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Like, so it's about creating the habits and the right daily habits around, and then factoring it in. Have your ice cream and have your thing and watch Netflix. Life's about fucking the things that you enjoy, you know. Just don't be a slave to it if something else is going on. It might, as you said, just taking ownership of the situation and being able to realize, do I really need the ice cream? Brian, do you really need that extra tub of Ben and Jerry's? Probably not.
You just made a great point. I love that. That it's just, and I said this when we caught up. What I love about you break it down. You make things so accessible. Because I think too often people in nutrition, you know, I'm guilty sometimes because of my sports science background. I've been indoctrinated, so I use these like long words and people go, what do you mean? Whereas you just remove that and it's brilliant. We were talking to Einstein. If you can't explain it to your grandma, you don't know it well enough. And you know it. And that's what I love about you. But sorry, I digress. One thing that you just made a point there, which was just adherence. So we were talking about International Journal of Obesity 2008, a huge meta study, a study of thousands of studies, and they wanted to find the single best diet for fat loss. So as you can imagine, everyone was on tenterhooks. Everyone wanted to know, is it Atkins? Is it South Beach? What do I need to do? Do I need to go keto? Let me know. And what they found, and I quote, weight loss was highest in those most adherent. So all that they found was the diet didn't matter, sticking to it did.
Yeah.
And on that note, it's just like, do you know what? Tub of ice cream. You know, people sometimes look at me going out and they say, what's the best food to lose fat? And I'm like, I like cupcakes. And they'll be like, lose fat. I'm like, yeah, because it makes me adherent.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, so there's, you know, but be honest, I'm not talking 10 cupcakes, but it's this. And then even, and I had this discussion, again, I gave a lecture not too long ago, and God bless her, this girl, and it took a lot, she put her hand up, and she felt really bad, because she went out the night before, she had a few drinks, and then she nailed, like, a huge pizza, and she was like, oh, I was training so hard, and she was, I think it was the London Marathon she might have been training for, so she's training months in advance, and she's already beaten herself up about it, and I just stopped her and I just went, but do you know what you just said there? I said, what were you drinking? And she goes, oh, I went out and it was a Sunday dinner. I had red wine. I was like, right, let's deconstruct this right now. Because I honestly don't think there's such a thing as an inherently bad food. Trans fatty acids, granted, and certain artificially made, but that's almost poison. That's not food.
Yeah.
But food. And I was like, so you had red wine? And she was like, yeah. I was like, okay, brilliant. Loaded with resveratrol, okay? Won many studies, plant extract, looked at anti-aging, antioxidant, loads of benefits to that. So that night, you didn't have red wine, you flooded your body with an antioxidant. She was like,
and instantly 1,000 people sign up to any program Ross Edgley ever does from now on.
And she was like, oh,
sign me up.
She was like, oh, and then I had chocolate cake. You know, I was like, okay, but yeah, chocolate by the modern definition, the one that's laden with caramel and fudge and sugar. Yeah, all right, that's probably not all, you know, all that good. But then again, mid-marathon de sable, yeah, you probably were that. So yeah, again, not inherently bad. But I said, but dark chocolate, high in cocoa, a plant-based food. You know, the Mayan warriors used to say, I will go into battle without my sword, but not my cocoa beans. You know, that's how much they valued it. You know, high in flavonoids, improved insulin sensitivity, cognitive functioning, makes you smarter, basically, cardiovascular health. So she was like, okay. I said, so that's what you did. You made yourself smarter with a better heart. And she was like, oh, yeah. And then I said, and finally, we come to the pizza. And she's laughing at this point. And I was just like, you come to the pizza. I said, now, so when did you have it? And it was a Monday, that was it. And I think she'd gone out, you know, had a few too many drinks. I think it was on the Saturday or Sunday. And I was like, okay. I said, now, if you ran a marathon today, or even a half marathon, she goes, yeah. I said, would that pizza that you had on Saturday night, would that be considered a cheat meal with all the stigma attached to it that you're clearly feeling bad about right now? Or would it be carb loading, which is a sports nutrition protocol that's been around years and years and years? And she was just like, well, I guess it would be carb loading. I was like, right. So if you go home now, you know, tonight, and you go for a run, you can feel pretty good about yourself that you loaded your body with antioxidants, the red wine, had something that improves cardiovascular health and cognitive functioning, dark chocolate, and you were just carb loading, essentially. And she was just like, yeah. And I was like, right, go and get your shoes and go and smash her up. And you could see, like, this weight was lifted off her shoulder. And I was like, but you, do you know what? It's all in your head. You know, no food's inherently bad. And when people beat themselves up, I'm just like, don't. Because I saw you nailing the dark chocolate at the rugby. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Because you understand. But no one came over to you and went, oh, Brian, having a cheat meal. You're like, no, it's dark chocolate. I'm having a plant-based food. An apple, would you?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, it's all in your head. It's in a lot of people's head. And all I say is just refuse to be dictated to by, like, the media, but other people, like, making you feel bad about it. And, you know, just, yeah. Sorry, long answer.
I love it, because the irony of that is the stress and cortisol that was probably circulating through her bodies through stressing herself out was doing her way more damage than the fucking food she ate.
Yes, that's exactly. So now people are now looking at behavioral science, because it's just like, we know how to lose weight. Just create a calorie deficit, to put it very bluntly. But yeah, macronutrients, micronutrients, and it can go on. But essentially, if you're in a calorie deficit, you'll lose weight. So everybody, we've known about it. Benjamin Franklin, to like, lengthen thy life, lessen thy meals.
Yeah.
You know, he knew, and we've known it for years. So that's not the hard part. Sticking to it is behavioral science. And it's only just now that we're going, oh, hang on, we know how to lose weight. Let's like teach people to actually stick to it, adherence. And you're right, Brian, mate. Those people who are beating themselves up, and I'm just like, you've not done anything wrong. You've not done anything wrong at all. And those restrictive diets are just so counterintuitive. You know, you end up on a binge. But if you just allow yourself not even allow yourself, quite often post-workout, I'll just nail like dark chocolate and I'll mix it in a bowl of like oats and warm it up with like yogurt, and it just tastes unbelievable. And so then when someone says, do you want a dessert? I'm like, I kind of just have one. I'll have another one if you want.
Yeah. But that's it. You know, like I've regularly saying on the podcast and on different platforms, that the best nutritional plan is the one fits into your lifestyle with foods you enjoy, is in alignment with your goals. Like, it's not this one or that one, or this is the one size. Because the truth is, if there was one diet that works for everybody, like the fucking study, everybody would do that diet and everyone would look the way they wanted to look. It's about finding what works for each person. And then, as you said, and I've done this, I've been a victim of that, binging on food and then feeling really crap about yourself for 2-3 days after. And that stress and cortisol, that's way fucking worse than the extra 500 calories you ate. Like,
yeah. But you made a good point then, which was just like, the best art in the world on paper is useless if you can't follow it. I could write a fantastic one, and I'd be like, there you go. What do you think to that? You're like, Ross, I need help with the marathon to Sable. Like, right, Brian, no worry, mate, I've got it. And I write you out this amazing plan, and all of a sudden you pick it up and you're buzzing because you're like, oh, Ross has written me a plan, and you look at it and you're just like, what? I don't, but, you know, I don't know. I've put something weird in there. Like, I'm trying to think of something weird that you put. Just anything that you don't like. I could be like, right, you're going to have 200 grams of rice cakes. You'd be like, but I don't like rice cakes, right? Oh, well, that diet is going to be useless for you, isn't it? Or like, I mean, I love dairy. I love, like, natural yogurt. Someone was lactose intolerant, and I'm like, this is the best diet in the world. They're like, they'll be trying to follow it with their digestive system going, why do you hate me so much? It's just like, it makes no sense. So you're so right. The best thing so often when creating a diet is just go, what do you like? And people go, quite like, you know, or this is a good one. I always say to people in lectures, I'm like, you know, are you carb adapted or are you fat adapted? Two, energy yielding macronutrients. And they'll go, I don't know. I don't know. It sounds complicated. I'm like, it's not complicated. If I woke you up in the morning with breakfast in bed, sounds a bit odd, but stick with me. If I woke you up, breakfast in bed, what would you want me to wake you up with? Big bowl of, like, you know, oats with, like, honey drizzled on, or, like, oh, freshly baked bread, you know, like granary bread. Does, you know, and I'm selling it to them like this. I'm like, do you like that? And they're like, no. I'm like, all right, then cool. But what about, like, you know, peanut butter and, you know, with, like, oh, avocados, spring, and I start naming all of these fat sources, and they go, yeah, that one. You know, or they might be carb adapted. I'm like, brilliant, then that's your taste buds telling you something. Yeah. So if you are carb adapted and you love carbs, you know, so often it's like, oh, carbs are bad. But I'm like, if you're carb adapted, then don't go and try and achieve ketosis and go fat adapted. It will only end in disaster. It's, and identify that before you start.
100%. I love that. That's something similar that I do. I actually think I'm going to use that, though, just because I love that, the imagery of the two meals. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm getting hungry. But what I normally tell people, if, like, you want to find if you're carb or fat adapted, like, try dropping your carbs down for 3 or 4 days and see how you feel. If I drop my carbs to 0 to 50 grams and I up my fats, I feel amazing. If I have 300 or 400 grams of carbs, I feel bloated, I feel sluggish, I feel watery. Now, again, there's lots of different things that come into play there, but for the majority of the time, I know I'm more fat adapted that way. And it's a very easy test, because if you go low carb for 3-4 days and you feel incredible, you're probably fat adapted. If you feel like you're a zombie and you can't even hold a conversation with your friends, you're probably carb adapted.
You're so right. And no one will know. You can do tests and you can do all sorts, but ultimately, you know, you are your best expert. You know, that's as simple as, and you're right. That's another test that sometimes, again, I'll say, like, during a lecture, I said, right, everybody, if I all gave that law of biological individuality, you know, we're all more different than we are alike. You just said it. If me and you, Brian, sat down and we ate exactly the same bowl of porridge with everything down to the milligram, all, we would assimilate it completely differently. And sometimes it's just as simple as you said, if I gave everybody in this lecture, I was sat there and I was like, if I gave you all a massive bowl of porridge, and I held up this bowl of porridge to show everyone, it was huge, it's what I eat during my swims. I was like, how would you all feel? Put your hand up if you'd all just feel pumped and full of energy and you'd want to come run with me. And, you know, half people put their hand up and I was like, yeah. And then I was like, but what, how would you feel on the other? And the other half was like, I would feel sluggish, I'd want to go to sleep, you know, I'd be in a glycemic coma, I'd just want to just, like, tuck me in, I'm done. Yep. And I was like, cool, then there's no worries, then you were fat adapted. And it's that simple. Too often, yeah, if you want to go down the sports performance route and we start analysing the intricacies of each, fine. But for most people, you know, it's like when you identify that, that is huge. They are, you know, by far and away on a trajectory of their diet and their goals that is so much more promising than what they've probably been trying to do, following something that just their body's going, we don't like this. Yeah. We don't agree with this.
But that lends to so much adherence, because you feel so much better when you know which one you work better off. You wouldn't put petrol into a diesel car, and you wouldn't put diesel into a petrol car, you know?
So right. And that's it as well. Yeah, cognitive function is also, like, mentally, you'll just be like, oh, I feel horrible. Mm-hmm. So it's not just fat loss. It's not just performance. It's just actually running your entire day, like your life. Your life will be more efficiently fueled. That's a brilliant one. Just put it in a car. It's not going to go very far.
Yeah, like, it'll get you a little bit, but it's not going to work long term. Ross, We will 100% have to do a part two at some stage, because I want to roll into the rapid fire and I can literally talk to you all day. And I'm sure anyone listening is like, fucking just shut up, lads. But this has been awesome. I want to jump into the rapid fire if that works for you.
Yes.
And we will 100% roll with a part two at some stage. I plan to pop over to you at some stage, so we'll make a vlog and a podcast and everything out of it. So we'll make that happen.
Yes.
All right. So the rapid fire, Ross. Basically, you can one word answer these. You can expand on them. You can do whatever you like. It's just kind of questions that I always love to hear from people. I'm dying to hear your answers on it. Ready to rock?
Ready.
When you think of the word successful, who's the first person that comes to mind and why?
Oh, he's a good shit. I feel under pressure. Somebody like Richard Branson, just because Richard Branson said he never went into business solely to make money. You know, and he's produced thousands of jobs, philanthropy, raised thousands for charity and stuff, and it always stuck with me. That one, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. There's a common trend coming through. I just finished his newest book as well. It's well worth a read.
I need to get that. I'm going to get that after the swim.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I can't remember the name. His first one was Like a Virgin, Losing My Virginity, and this one's Finding My Virginity.
Nice.
Yeah, it's because he was going to say Virginity Found, and he has a whole joke about that at the start about I didn't go that route for obvious reasons. Anyways, moving on. What purchase of £100 or more or less has most positively affected your life in the last 6 or 12 months?
That's a good question. These are really good. I'm struggling.
So, for example, I've got a couple of things that I love. I'm a notoriously poor sleeper. So I bought some blue light blocking glasses because I'm really bad for going on my phone and iPad late at night, just replying to emails, things like that. And I bought blue light blocking glasses just to kind of put them on at nighttime, and it's massively helped my sleep. Cost me like €40. And if they broke tomorrow, I'd order another pair. Just to kind of give you an idea. So anything like that. It could be even a book, anything of £100 or less that's most positively affected your life.
This is going to sound so weird, but I bought lots of rope that doesn't chafe as much when I'm swimming. But it's actually changed my life this month because I was getting really bad chafing. And then for those who see, I mean, you saw, Brian, my neck when I was swimming for my first ever. I mean, they said it was the worst wetsuit chafing they've ever seen in the Great Swim. So chafing's a real issue for me. So that's changed my life. Rope.
I'll say right now, we're over 100 episodes in, well over 100 episodes in. I can do 1,000 episodes and I bet that'll never come up as a question, as an answer again. I love it. Alright, next one. Do you have a quote you live your life by or think of often?
Yes. Nassim Taleb, famous economist, and I love this quote, always says, as humans facing limited knowledge always resort to prescribed ideas and narratives. And I just think as humans always have limited knowledge over every single field, not just health and fitness and nutrition, but everything. And as a result, we always resort to these prescribed ideas that, you know, we've already had. So like, how does food work? Oh, calories. We know how food works, calories. And then, oh, macronutrients. It's like, no, it's far more intricate than that. The same with your body. You know, I want to build muscle. Oh, okay, that's 8 reps. Oh, but I want to build strength. Oh, that's 5 reps. But don't do 6 because that's a weird rep. It's like, no, the human body doesn't work like that. Yes. But as humans, facing limited knowledge, always resort to these prescribed ideas and narratives. You know, use them as guidelines, yes, but think beyond them at the same time. So,
I love it. I'm Black Swan, absolute amazing book. I'm on Anti-Fragile now. I started reading Anti-Fragile, so that's the next Nassim Taleb book that I've got.
You're way ahead of me. I'm back in kindergarten. I'm still way back.
It's good, man. Really, really good. Love it. What book, besides obviously your own one that's coming out next year, which actually I would like to touch on just at the end of the episode, we'll come to it, just because I've pre-ordered it, been fucking dying for this book for ages, so we'll talk on that at the end just briefly, and then hopefully when it comes out next year, we'll roll a part two, and we'll go into way more detail on it. But what book do you think everyone on the planet would benefit from reading? So not necessarily your favourite book, but what one do you think a lot of people would benefit from reading?
Felix Dennis, who started Dennis Publishing, and I think it is How to Get Rich. I think it's called that, which is just this really blunt title. But don't let that put you off. Only reason being, so those who don't know about Felix Dennis, I mean, he's died now, unfortunately, but he started Dennis Publishing, one of Britain's richest self-made, I'm pretty sure he was a billionaire.
He was a billionaire when he died, yeah.
Oh, and he was just, he was amazing because the book was written when he'd made all of his money. So it was, it's been written void of any marketing. Like, he didn't need the money at all. So it's just so honest. And he just, there's little bits in there. And he just, like, this is how honest he is. He's there saying, there's a paragraph in there and he says, people tell you that drugs are really bad and, oh, they're horrible and, oh, they're, you know, he goes, they're not, they're brilliant, but they'll kill you. That's the problem. And he's just, you're like, what?
Yeah.
And he's just so honest. And then he, you know, I'm not condoning it in any way. He then talks about, like, prostitutes and this life that he's lived, but he's just so honest. Yeah. And you just feel that you are, like, really listening to a man who's lived, done everything right and wrong, but he's just, like, laying it all bare in this book where he doesn't need the money. He's not trying to sell you anything. And I think when he was writing it, I get the impression, and certainly later, I think it was throat cancer that he died from, but don't quote me on that, but he was really sort of philosophical looking back on his life. And, you know, he was a billionaire, he was so rich, and one bit in there, and he said, if you're reading this and, you know, you're young, know that you have the greatest gift. You know, I would trade every penny I have right now to be in your shoes, because you will have so much opportunity. And you just read it and you're just like, you know, wow, this is a guy who's lived, and he's just really sort of part, this is his parting gift to the world in a weird way. It's a really good book. It's an amazing book.
I absolutely love that book. And anyone listening, the audio book, I think he reads the audio book. I'm not, don't quote me on that, but it feels like you're sitting in on somebody that's had an incredible life and you're just listening to them in conversation. That's how, like, I got through that book and I think it took me a day and a half. It just felt like you were, it felt like he was there speaking to you. And it's not, it, there's a lot of good tips in there on money and things like that, but it's more about how to get rich in life in all areas. And I did particularly like we said this at the Ruby when we met first. I love the quote that he's like, if you can fly it, float it, or fuck it, you need to rent it.
It's true. He's just, he's just raw. He's so honest. And you're right. You feel like you're chatting to somebody and they're just like your mate. And they're just being so honest. And that's what's really refreshing about that book. I've read a lot of books and a lot of time there's a bit of an agenda and, you know, and everything. Yeah. Whereas with that one, I'm like, wow, that's honest.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love it. Okay. Last one. And then I want to touch a little bit on your book just to kind of give a bit of a seed on that from my own selfish finding out about it. How has a failure or an apparent failure set you up for a later success? Or do you have a favorite failure of yours in any area of life? It might be, you know, academic, it could be fitness, it could be relationship, whatever it is, any area, any particular failure that you like, that you learned from and came out the other side of?
Yeah, I think swimming has probably got to be it. So swimming was my first sport and I was kind of knocking on international level, like, you know, sort of Olympic sort of squad. And my coach was just, you know, for those who don't know, like I said, I am built like a hobbit. I'm 5'9 on a good day.
Dude, you're fucking jacked, man. Like, I'm going to put up photos of him. You've been really modest here. For anyone that's listening and hasn't seen him, the dude is fucking jacked.
And my coach was just like, look, Ross, you know, unless you grow another foot, it's not going to happen. You know, I was lining up on the starting blocks against people like Michael Phelps's size, and I was just at such a disadvantage. So, you know, I think the failure was the fact that I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. And I left sport. I left swimming for so long, and I went into other sports and everything. And I think that's why certainly this strongman swim, you know, in a few days time now, if I am able to cross the Caribbean, in a sort of selfish way, it will be me sort of saying, you know, swimming was my first love and it doesn't matter, you know, that I have tiny limbs, I can still swim across the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And that will be quite nice. One for myself, but also, you know, if there is a small vertically challenged kid sort of listening to this at some point going, oh, maybe I can do that as well. They don't, not necessarily give up, but I was just like, well, the coach knows best and stuff. And I went into water polo and I played, you know, that for Great Britain instead. But, you know, it was, swimming's a love of mine and stuff. So, yeah, but it's helped me because I've gone into other things now. But at the time, it was a failure of mine that I never really represented Great Britain for swimming. So, yeah.
I love it. Awesome thing. Okay, before I tell everyone where to find out more about you, and I'll be linking everything across in the show notes and on my social media, talk to me about the book. This has been a long time coming. You don't go too much into it because next year it's out. We'll do a part two and we'll talk. Yeah. But give us a bit of a brief background and a taster so we can ramp up those pre-orders because this book's going to be freaking awesome.
Bless you. No, see, you're so right. I mean, I'm going to keep this so short because I get crazy passionate about it. But it's been 10 years in the making. And it just, this is one thing that I said, it's not necessarily about me. So although it talks about all the adventures and the world records and there is a systematic way to run your body. So everything that we talked about there, the pyramid of priority, but there's also this systematic body's user guide in there that everyone will understand how to run their body after actually reading it. What I love about it, Michel Foucault, who I think I pronounced that right, he was a French poet, and he said, you know, I'm not a guru. My job is to make windows where there were once walls. And I have been so lucky being at Loughborough University and traveling so much that I've got to learn speed principles with Linford Christie, you know, 100-meter world record champion. I've learned strength principles from Andy Bolton, first man to deadlift 1,000 pounds, 7-time world powerlifting champ. Jeff Capes, World's Strongest Man, you know, the people that I've had been so fortunate enough to learn from are just amazing. And I just think their sort of principles and teachings and needed to be put into this huge eclectic book because no one's ever done that. You know, everyone's always an expert in one field. But I always had this goal when I left university, like so over 10 years ago, to just create this book. And I set out to make the most comprehensive and eclectic fitness book ever written, which was a huge sort of bold statement. And it's taken me 10 years to do it. But now I'm sitting there and I'm reading it and all the publishers. I mean, they commissioned 80,000 words, and I handed them 280,000, and they were like, "That's not in the contract. You only had to write 80,000." I was like, "I don't care what's in the contract. You don't understand. It's not about the contract. It's truly about like leaving behind this literary legacy that everybody just sort of says, you know, I can come back time and time again to this book to understand how to run my body." And that's what it is. It's like a user guide for your body. If you want to be faster, quicker, more powerful, stronger, bigger, come back to this book and it will systematically break down how to do it. But then there's this whole narrative that is drugs in the Amazon and like we talked about and living with the Sam Bushman and all sorts. So there's this narrative throughout the whole thing where you go, this guy's a lunatic. But I'm just the guy who fuses the real geniuses together is basically it. But like you said as well, I think it's what's going to be amazing is, as you know, I can't do anything by heart. So it's the world's fittest book, but the world's fittest book tour, which we have planned. Because I don't want it just to be like a book, and I want everybody to collectively come together for it.
Yeah.
So we're planning these like mass workouts competition, and I can't say too much right now because I'll get in trouble. But what we have planned is just for everybody to get involved in it. It's not just going to be like, you know, buy it. There's some pretty cool stuff. And we need to stop by your house, Brian, on the world.
Yeah, 100%, man. Fucking representing the West Coast here for that. Definitely. Man. And tell everybody, when is the planned release date?
So it's May 2018. That's when it's going to be launched. And then we'll be doing the book tour all throughout May. But there's going to be a lot of things coming up at the moment as well in terms of pre-orders as well. So there's going to be a lot of pre-order competitions, giveaways. We've had because it's basically what's really, really nice, and it's a nice problem to have. In 24 hours, it jumped to the Amazon bestseller list, even though it's only pre-orders.
Yeah, it's nuts, man.
Brian, it was amazing. It was a huge, huge compliment. And it's just like, if anyone listening who's bought, like, you have no idea how much you've helped, because what that means is all of these other brands now know that there's something there, and so they want to become part of this movement. And so what's nice is Red Bull, who I do a lot with, if you can imagine, you know, Red Bull, you know, to be blunt, their budgets are amazing.
Yeah.
So they're just like, right, what do you need? And it's not what I need, it's what we need collectively. Everyone who's bought the book, what do we need? And I think if everyone who's done pre-orders just goes, we would quite like a stadium where we can all do a workout, I'm like, well, that's what I'm going to ask Red Bull for. You know, that's how I sort of think. And we've got all these brands coming on board. So it's like, the book's awesome, but it's just, it represents so much more. And for these pre-order sales and stuff like that, it's we're just going to turn it into something crazy. That's the plan. It's going to be pretty cool.
That is absolutely awesome. I am going to be linking that. I'm going to be linking all your profiles, everything on that, because that book needs to get ordered. I'm freaking dying to read it when it comes out. And Ross, where is the best place for people to find out more about you?
Oh, yes. I do a lot on probably Instagram, but Facebook, Twitter, you know, the usual sort of channels. And then we've got the newsletter as well on my website, which you can sign up to. But I said it. But coming to the end of the sort of podcast, I just want to say, mate, thank you so much. Like I said, this is overdue, and I've been a fan of yours from afar, because obviously we live so far away for a while now. But then you very quickly became a good friend when we just kind of ignored the rugby and ended up chatting.
I don't know how we both didn't get sacked, mate. It's like, we're just gonna chat fucking life and fitness and training.
So yeah, man, I've said it before, but like, as soon as you come over to Cheshire, we're gonna crush. I already spoke to the Keswick guys. We're going to crush some fell races. So we'll do a podcast from the top of, like, you know, Scarfell Pike or something like that. We'll do something. But
that sounds sick. Ross, cannot thank you enough. This has been freaking awesome. I can't believe we're an hour in. I could go for another two. Mate, thank you so much.